strategies. Griheshu, at home. Vartamanaha, being present. Api, although. Saha, King Prithu. Samrajya, the entire empire. Shriya, opulence. Anvitaha, being absorbed in. Na, never. Asajata, became attached. Indriya arteshu, for sense gratification. Ni, nor. Aham, I am. Matihi, consideration. Arka, the sun. Vat, like. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Prithu, who was very opulent due to the prosperity of his entire empire, remained at home as a householder. Since he was never inclined to utilize his opulences for the gratification of his senses, he remained unattached, exactly like the sun, which is unaffected in all circumstances. The word griheshu is significant in this verse. Out of the four ashrams, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, only a Grihastha, or householder, is allowed to associate with women. Therefore, the Grihastha ashram is a kind of license for sense gratification given to the devotee. Prithu Maharaj was special in that although he was given license to remain a householder, and although he possessed immense opulences in his kingdom, he never engaged in sense gratification. This was a special sign that indicated him to be a pure devotee of the Lord. A pure devotee is never attracted by sense gratification, and consequently, he is liberated. In material life, a person engages in sense gratification for his own personal satisfaction. But in the devotional or liberated life, one aims to satisfy the senses of the Lord. In this verse, Maharaj Prithu is likened to the sun, Arkavat. Sometimes the sun shines on stool, urine, and so many other polluted things. But since the sun is all powerful, it is never affected by the polluted things with which it associates. On the contrary, the sunshine sterilizes and purifies polluted and dirty places. Similarly, a devotee may engage in so many material activities, but because he has no desire for sense gratification, they never affect him. On the contrary, he dovetails all material activities for the service of the Lord. So Since a pure devotee knows how to utilize everything for the Lord's service, he is never affected by material activities. Instead, by his transcendental plans, he purifies such activities. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sarva Padi Vinirmuktam, Tat Paratena Nirmalam. His aim is to become completely purified in the service of the Lord without being affected by material designations. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshu Militan Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Panchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Titanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo. It's a very nice verse. It's very relevant to all of us because we're engaged in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission, which means that we're in the environment, relating to the environment constantly. As such, it's absolutely incumbent upon us to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness while dealing with all these material situations, material activities, all this material energy. It's not an easy thing. So therefore, Maharaj Prithu is being glorified here because he has all the opulence at his command. In spite of that, because of his dedication to devotional service, and because of his taste in devotional service, he is able to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness and not be distracted by the opulences that surround him. So this quality of renunciation is of the utmost importance for us. And as Prabhupada is indicating here, not that we refrain from utilizing our senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. So we engage our senses in the service of the master of the senses. In other words, we utilize everything in Krishna's service. That's what our identification is. We see everything as part and parcel of Krishna, everything belonging to Krishna. And so we use it all in his service. Not that we don't use it, but we use it in his service. So the more one has, the more glorious it is if he renounces it. We were talking about Ambarish Prabhu last night, who recently came to Argentina in order to preach. And he's so attractive to the people in general. Not just because he has lots of money and he's Henry Ford's great-grandson, which is attractive in itself, to meet someone who's very, very rich. People like that. Rich, beautiful, famous, strong. What else? Wise. People are very, very much attracted to that. Renunciation. Not so much, as we know. They think a renunciate is foolish. But one who is very wealthy and renounces his wealth, yes, that's very attractive. So Henry Ford's great-grandson, who's become a Hare Krishna devotee and is utilizing his wealth in the service of the Lord, very, very intriguing to people. Someone with so much money, utilizing it not for himself, but in Krishna's service. So as a result of that purity, he was given a great welcome by all the people, and there were wonderful articles about him in all the major newspapers, magazines. He appeared on television because people are
They want to see it, this person who has millions and millions of dollars and is giving it all up. Very, very attractive. And they saw such a humble soul, just thinking of himself not as a multimillionaire, grandson of Henry Ford, but thinking of himself as a devotee, as a humble devotee. And when we say humble, of course, a humble person doesn't think of himself as being humble, but humble in the sense that just a simple person, just a simple devotee. So that's the way a devotee thinks of himself, not in terms of his material designations, but in terms of his eternal designation. Gopi Bharata Parakamalayor Das Das Anudas. Lord Chaitanya explains. It's not any of the doesn't belong to any of the four dharmas or varnas or ashrams. Just a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who's the master of the gopis. That's how a devotee thinks of himself. But if we absorb ourselves in the objects of the senses, if we have the facility to do this, and we all do, because we're living in a relatively opulent situation, then we identify with the body and all the facilities that we have for sense gratification. If we're good looking, if we're smart, if we're rich, powerful, then we identify with that and the objects of the senses that we can enjoy. So living in this modern society is very, very dangerous. That's why Prabhupada wanted us to always remain in the association of the devotees. Because by this association, one becomes attached to the devotees and Krishna and devotional service by hearing and chanting, as opposed to becoming attached to the objects of the senses, or remaining attached or becoming attached once again to the objects of the senses. I was reading a conversation of Srila Prabhupada recently. Prabhupada was talking about this topic, and he was explaining how dangerous it was to be in this material world, relating with all the objects of the senses, how very careful we have to be. And then Prabhupada quoted that verse that's normally quoted in this connection. While contemplating the objects of the senses, one becomes attached. And then Prabhupada said, by contemplating Krishna, one becomes attached to Krishna. By meditating on Krishna's devotees, associating with Krishna's devotees, one becomes attached to them. So Prabhupada used this verse in both ways. Usually he just uses it in one way. But the point is there. By association, one becomes attached. And that's what we want. So there's nothing more important than that. There was another conversation I was reading where Prabhupada was talking with the devotees about living inside the temple, outside the temple, which was better. One devotee was saying, well, isn't it true, Prabhupada? Is it better to live in the temple? Prabhupada said, well, you can be living in the temple and your mind can be somewhere else, so not necessarily. And then one devotee said, well, some devotees are saying that it's very bad to live outside the temple, that if you live outside the temple, you just wind up going to hell. Prabhupada said, generally. So it was a balanced presentation. You can live in the temple, and if your mind is in hell, you'll go there also. But when Prabhupada said that about living outside the temple, he was stressing the importance of associating with devotees, and he saw how devotees living outside the temple don't avail themselves, or have the tendency to not avail themselves sufficiently in that regard. Then Prabhupada wanted to say, he said, just like the stock exchange. You go to the stock exchange and you're doing trading. It's very, very easy. You can do really, really good business. But if you try to do your trading outside the stock exchange, if you live far away, very, very difficult. Because now they have, I think you can do that on the internet. But the point was that, and then he said, if you stay away from the association of devotees, doing your business in devotional service is very, very difficult. And you can very easily fall away and then become absorbed in the objects of the senses, which were those very things that caused us to come to devotional service in the first place, our aversion to those sense objects and our attraction to Krishna consciousness. And now Kali Yuga is so, it's advanced so much that Maya has come right into the home. So we can associate with worldly minded people just by turning on the television set or turning on the computer. So Maya has become very, very insidious in that respect. Maya can take away our desire for sense gratification that we're building up and building up and building up. Maya can just take it away. And it's a gradual process also, just like advancing in Krishna consciousness is gradual. Falling away also can be gradual. That's Maya's trick. She comes in like a needle and out like a, as Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj says, like an elephant. Even bigger than a plow, it's an elephant. So that's Maya. Remember once when I was very little, 6 years old, I found out about matches. Very intriguing phenomena. You light a match and watch the flame and you stamp it out with your foot. We used to like to play with matches. So once we were in this field, we were lighting matches, lighting a few blades of grass and then stamping them out. Wonderful discovery. So somehow or other, we lit a match, and then we were a little bit inattentive, and the flame started increasing, and more grass got on fire, and before we knew it, it was out of our control. And the whole field caught on fire. We walked away pretty fast. And then the fire engines came. It was a whole big scene. We completely destroyed the field. And I remember that when I became a devotee, how Maya can just enter in, and before you know it, she's completely captured you. And I think about this in relationship to television a lot, because usually devotees who live outside, and some devotees who live in the temples too, manage to have television sets somewhere. It's very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. Because the Maya is very expert in capturing you, just a little, and then a little more, and a little more, and a little more. There was one devotee 2 years ago, that was New York Rathiacha, 2 or 3 years ago, and he was trying to decide whether to go or not because there was some final championship game on television. He was really in a lot of anxiety because he really wanted to watch the game. He wound up going to the Rathiacha. But he wasn't all there at the same time. The first chance he could, he went to find out what happened. And then there was another, I was at a program several years ago in San Diego at this devotee's house. We were all in the living room. And he had this cabinet in the living room. And he was sitting by the cabinet during the lecture in the kirtan. Every once in a while, he just opened the cabinet just a little bit. A few minutes, he'd open it, he'd close it. And then finally, towards the end of the program, I said, well, what do you have in there? What's going on? He said, well, there's this boxing match on. And he just couldn't refrain from watching the boxing match. Another devotee told me he was chanting his, he couldn't chant his rounds unless he was watching television at the same time. So it's, these things are funny, but they're sad, because we see how captivating these things are, and they're just right in the home, if they have to be. They don't really have to be. In fact, one might say they shouldn't be. If one is finding oneself become distracted, then one thinks, well, I need this. I need this. I have to have this. But we don't really have to have it. If we associate with devotees in the right way, the excitement of preaching Krishna consciousness, just like today, devotees will be going out on Harinam. It'll be wonderful, wonderful experiences, meeting people. To meet somebody who's been hankering for spiritual life or something, suffering like anything, and takes a book or chants Hare Krishna, meets the devotees, there's nothing more satisfying and exciting than that, devising ways and means to introduce people to Krishna consciousness. There's nothing at all more enlivening than that. And Prabhupada, he wanted the leaders to give the devotees new and fresh challenges in this mission of Lord Chaitanya to inspire them, enliven them in spiritual life, so they would think about these things. Think about the wonderful kirtans, about the wonderful classes, the wonderful preaching. This is what devotees, they look forward to. This is the life of a devotee. Devotee's not interested in material position or material sense gratification. And if we really want to be preparing ourselves for going back home to Godhead, then this is what we need to do. We need to appreciate the simple activities of devotional service. And one doesn't have to have any material opulences in order to do that. The residents in the spiritual world, what are they doing? They're doing some menial service for Krishna. That's all. Nobody's doing anything great. Devotees are making flower garlands. Devotees are washing Krishna's clothes, washing his pots, cleaning his house. This is what devotees live for, because it's an internal meditation. We're serving the Lord. It's such a simple thing to do. I remember I was talking like this once in San Diego, in Argentina. And during the questions, one devotee, she raised her hand. Were you there? She raised her hand. She said, you know, these are very good points you're making, Maharaj. I was thinking, well, maybe you could clean the bathrooms. Were you there? She said, maybe you could clean the bathrooms. I think that would be very good for you. So I said, you know, actually, I'd really like to clean the bathrooms, because spending hours and hours a day dealing with all the headaches of administration and all the problems, it would actually be a great relief if someone else could do that. Give me some time to just do something simple like cleaning the bathroom. And I remember when I first became a devotee, my first engagement was taking the garbage out. And I really didn't like that very much, taking out the garbage. But then I realized, well, this is Krishna's garbage. This is not like ordinary garbage. This is Krishna's garbage. The devotee's been doing devotional service. We're serving the deities. And this is all a manifestation of service to Krishna. It's a very wonderful thing, actually. It's Krishna's garbage. And I began to see it in a different way. So if devotees can be satisfied in this way, then so many of our problems would be gone. And we see the advanced devotees in our movement. They're satisfied with these simple activities in spiritual life. There's one devotee in Argentina who I've never heard him complain about anything. He's always happy. And he's engaged in simple activities, Harinam, Pujari work, doesn't have any position. And he's always happy. And everybody loves him so much. And it's such a pleasure to be in his association. And he's so happy. That's the substance of devotional life. We just have to try to enter into that and not complicate our lives by trying to fulfill so many other desires. I was thinking also how we're talking about someone who has everything at his disposal and does not utilize that which he or she has for sense gratification, but just utilizes it in service. This is the glory of Prithu Maharaj. And the more one has, the more renounced one is, the more glorious he is. If you have like just a few pennies or something, or you don't have much and you're humble, people don't think that's so wonderful because, well, what does this person have to be proud about anyway? It's not such a great thing for this person to be humble. But someone who has a lot, just like George Harrison, really famous, and he was humble at the same time, so it was so attractive. Or we talk about Ambarish. So who has the most? Who has more than anyone? Krishna. Krishna is unlimited in terms of his opulences. So when Krishna takes a humble position, that's supremely attractive. And Krishna is all attractive. And one of the reasons he's all attractive is because he is so humble. Often we don't think of Krishna as being, God as being a humble personality. At least the Judeo-Christian concept of God. But that's our Krishna. Krishna has everything. But what is he like? He likes to just give that conception of himself up, put all of that aside, and just be a simple cowherd boy in Vrindavan. And he likes to subject himself to the control of his devotees and serve his devotees as they like, all according to their desire. So that's the most wonderful example that we have of someone who's given up all designations. The most attractive thing to anyone would be to be God. But if we really understand what God is and who God is, then we would understand, well, God is Krishna, who's given up all his designations just to serve his devotees. In fact, that's the very purpose of Krishna's existence, just to serve his devotees. He doesn't do anything else. He exists for loving and serving his devotees. That's all he thinks about. So if we really want to be God, then that's what it means to be God. That we're just humble servants of the devotees. That's what God does. So the next time you meet someone that wants to be God, you can just explain to him, well, this is what God does. Are you willing to do that? God's not exploiting his opulences for his own personal sense gratification. So in this way, if we try to follow in the footsteps of these great souls, try to follow in Krishna's footsteps in that sense as well, then gradually we'll be able to make advancement and give up all these false designations that we have a tendency to take shelter of and exploit for our sense gratification. Thank you very much. Questions? Comments? Maharajas? Yes, Prabhu. Well, Lalita is always trying to exploit Krishna whenever she can. And what to speak of Radharani's mother-in-law. So many stories in this connection, but this is all to increase the loving exchanges of Radha and Krishna. So it's there. I don't know if it's time for a story, but well, the example I was thinking of, just part of one little story, when Krishna arranged for Radharani to be crowned as the queen of Vrindavan, this big coronation ceremony, and she appointed Lalita as the prime minister and all the duties of Vrindavan, because now she was the queen, she had to have a staff. Government staff, and all the duties were given out, and then Krishna comes walking along, and Krishna said, "Well, I'd like to help also." And Lita said, "Well, very sorry, all the duties were already given out. Where were you during the coronation ceremony?" And Krishna said, "Well, is there anything I can do? I'd like to do some service." And Lita said, "Well, very, very sorry. You just came too late. There's really nothing for you to do." And Krishna was very dejected. So then he came up with an idea. His idea was that, "Well, I'd like to be the chief constable. And I'd like to go around the kingdom and proclaim Srimati Radharani's glories. And make sure that everyone who is living within the kingdom accepts the supremacy of Srimati Radharani. And I'd like to make sure that all the law and order is kept within the kingdom." So Lita said, "Well, I'm sorry, we don't have a job description for that. So we'll have to consider that. What you have to do is write up a proposal and then submit the proposal to the government, and then we'll consider it." So Krishna went back, he wrote his proposal and explained everything very, very thoroughly and handed it in. And they said, "Well, this looks okay, but there are no references here. You have to have some references." So Krishna is looking around for references. Finally, he gets a couple of references. And he hands them in. And they said, "Well, we consider this. We'll let you know." He said, "Well, why don't you let me know right now?" And Lita was saying, "Well, it's a whole process that we have to go through. And then I'll speak to the queen, and we'll see what she has to say." So Krishna persisted and persisted, and finally Srimati Rani and her cabinet, they all agreed that, "Okay, you can take the job." So Krishna was very, very happy. And he went to go, and they said, wait. They said, "You don't have a uniform. A chief constable has to have a uniform." Because actually, the gopis just love seeing Krishna dressed in so many beautiful ways, like a toll collector, or sometimes he disguises himself as a Brahmin, or a dancing actor. Krishna dresses so beautifully in so many different ways. So they wanted to see him dressed as a chief constable. So Krishna came back, he agreed, so they dressed him very beautifully as a chief constable with all the ornaments of a sheriff. And then Krishna started to go, and they said, wait. "You don't have a badge, you have to have a badge, every constable has a badge." So they came back and they put a nice badge on him. Then he went off. And then later, he finally came back. He said, "Victory. I went everywhere, all over the land, and proclaimed Srimati Radharani's glories." Actually, everyone already knew. They already accepted her as the Queen of Vrindavan. Just hearing Krishna proclaim her glories and seeing how Krishna was dressed gave everyone so much transcendental satisfaction. So Krishna came back and he said, "Éxito, victory." He said, "But there was one thing that happened that wasn't very good at all." And what Krishna had done, because he was very mad at Lalita for giving him such a hard time. So what Krishna had done, he had taken his flute and he hid it in Lalita's veil. So he said, "But there's one really unfortunate thing that happened." "What was that?" "Somebody stole my flute." So the gopi said, "Someone stole your flute?" They said, "What's so bad about that? That's the greatest news we've heard in a long time." "Because it's always keeping us up at night. It's causing us so many problems. We can't concentrate on anything. This is the most wonderful news we've heard in a long time." So then Radharani said, "Well, no, wait a second. No, this isn't good at all. This is bad for Vrindavan. If word gets out that there's thievery in the kingdom, then it won't be good for our commerce. We have to do something about this very soon." And Lalita said, "What do you mean, we have to do something? Here we have a chief constable. He's the one who's supposed to be solving all these problems, and he can't even solve his own problems. I think he should be fired." So then Krishna said, "Well, I can understand you saying that, and it would ordinarily make sense. But if the loss of my flute is due to corruption in high places in the government, that's another thing." So everybody looked at each other, wondering who to suspect. So then they started searching each other to see if maybe somebody had the flute. And Lalita was in charge of searching everybody. She's the prime minister. Nobody had the flute. And all of a sudden, the flute dropped out of Lalita's veil. And everybody pointed at her. And then she pointed at Krishna, and she started yelling and screaming at Krishna. Back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. "Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't." And Lalita said, "Well, if you didn't, you really didn't, then the proof will be that you go up to Srimati Radharani and you touch her lotus feet and you declare that you did not take the flute and put it in my veil." So Krishna said, "All right." Then he started walking towards Radharani. And as he was getting closer and closer to Srimati Radharani, he was becoming more and more ecstatic. And he was becoming so ecstatic that he couldn't move. Finally, somehow or other, he got to Srimati Radharani's lotus feet. But he was so choked up that he just couldn't say anything. And so Lalita said, "Just see. You did play this trick." And then Radharani, she took compassion on Krishna. She said, "Okay. Okay. Let it be. But now I have a request. I fulfilled everyone's request. of becoming the Queen of Vrindavan. But I don't feel complete as the Queen of Vrindavan. Every queen must have a king. So my humble request is that Krishna become the king of Vrindavan. And everyone was overjoyed, cheering, very, very happy. And they dressed Krishna up now as a king. And they put Krishna on the throne next to Radharani as the king of Vrindavan. Everyone was so happy. Everyone except Lalita. She was furious. She was furious. She had accused Krishna of being envious of her and wanting to take her position. And that's why he caused all this intrigue of her stealing the flute. And now Krishna gave her a look as if to say, just see. Now I'm the king of Vrindavan. And I didn't even have to pass through the post of prime minister. So these things are always going on. So Krishna likes to be exploited. He loves to be at the mercy of his devotees. Yes.
I'm referring you back to when you were given the example of the person who felt that he really needed to watch television. You remember when
television?
You were... Yeah, yeah. How Maya insidiously sneaks into our lives. And so that inspired the question, how do we distinguish between very intense desires... regardless of the quality of those desires, they may be sinful desires, they may be desires that can be fulfilled under the theistic laws of conduct. But regardless of the quality of those intense desires, how can we distinguish them from needs? Or does intense desires... is that synonymous with need? In which case, if simply having an intense desire qualifies it as a need, then that person, for example, who couldn't do without television, it would seem to me that that would be a need that would need to be regulated, but it would still be a need because if he were to suddenly stop watching television, you know, his mind might be so distracted, it would be like Arjuna going off to the forest, and he wouldn't be able to give as much as of himself to, you know, Krishna, as if he had maybe regulated that television watching. So, you know, you were saying that, you know, we don't need it, we don't need television. But it seems like we do need it according to our level of attachment to it. So can you just clarify that for me, please?
That's a very nice question. The point is that if we can accept what the goal is, that's very important. And then the next is to we have to try to determine how to proceed towards that goal. We have certain attachments that perhaps we can't do without, or that we don't want to do without, or we sort of want to do without them, but not that much. But we know we should. So how to purify ourselves to get to the point where we don't have to get engage in sense gratification. We're on the platform of anartha nivritti, a lot of us. engaging in the process, but still having many attachments. Anartha Nivritti, sometimes you fulfill material desires, sometimes you don't. It's a very long process, Anartha Nivritti. Very, very long and arduous. To finally come to the point of nishtha, or being fixed in devotional service, which means, even though it might be difficult, one remains fixed. The next platform, ruchi, it's easier. And then asakti, it's spontaneous to just do without sense gratification. But Anartha Nivritti is very, very, very long process, and sometimes one doesn't even get through it. One falls away because of the improper execution of devotional service. Too much mixed with sense gratification. Many devotees fall away because of that. So at least we need to have a plan for purification. If not, we might not make it. We might not make it. So what is that plan? A large part of it should have to do with our increased absorption in devotional service. Increased association with devotees, increased absorption, involvement in sadhana, more responsibility in devotional service. So we don't have time. Just like sometimes people say, well, we hear you can't watch television, or you can't do this. We can say, well, I just don't have time for those things. Are you allowed to do this and that? Frankly, I don't have time. Because we're so busy, and we love our work, too. We love our devotional service. So we should come to the point where we don't even have time to think about these things. So how to engage ourselves? Otherwise, it's very difficult just do without it, then you start thinking about it all the time. But if we have something else to absorb ourselves in. And we do. There's so much, so much ISKCON television. So many things to watch nowadays. If we have to watch something. So many other things we can watch that actually inspire us in devotional service and don't and after watching these things, we identify ourselves more and more as Krishna's servant rather than more and more like Superman or Rambo or Batman or Spider-Man or somebody like that. What's the value? I mean, there's stuff to learn from everything. You can learn a lot from watching things in this world, but it's very dangerous because it never comes in its pure state like the Srimad Bhagavatam. It comes mixed with so many other things. So you might watch something that, well, that was very, that determination or that the morality that person showed, it's very, we need more of that in Krishna consciousness. It's true. But there are other things we don't need that we also get along with all that. So these things are changing. So just like anything else that we do, we're going out into the street today on Harinam. A lot of distractions there. But because we'll be chanting Hare Krishna, and those of us that absorb ourselves in the holy name won't be window shopping or whatever on Harinam. Sometimes devotees do that. Like the ones at the end of the line, you know. So Prabhupada's been so merciful to us to engage us like this. And Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami was saying how certain devotees he pushed. Prabhupada pushed us also with his love. He's still pushing us. And it's without being pushed, we're just naturally lazy. It's a symptom of people in Kali Yuga are naturally lazy, and it's very dangerous to be lazy and not fully engaged. So if we're pushed a little bit, we should be very, very grateful that somebody loves us enough to want to keep us fully engaged in devotional service. Yes, Mataji. No, actually, sir, I, even though I answered her in that way, I was thinking that I should do something like that. I really should try to do something like that, even though I didn't admit it at the time. And I think when I see devotees making flower garlands during class, serving the deities, and just doing something very simple for the deities, I'm very attracted to that, and I always think, when I see that, I always think, well, I should do something like that. Some simple service for the deities. And I try whenever I can. Because it's very purifying, the meditation. And I ask some of the devotees, when they're making garlands, what they're thinking about. If they're thinking properly, then it's just a wonderful meditation to make garlands for the Lord, because Krishna loves these flower garlands. Of course, cleaning the toilets is a little bit different. But I can see how that would be a very purifying engagement. So as far as it being offensive or not, I didn't really take it in that way, because I know this devotee. And she was really being sincere, trying to help me. So I actually appreciated it. Very nice. Very nice, very important media for preaching. Yes, Prabhu. I don't want to keep the devotees too long, because we have a lot of service today.
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he talks about the eightfold steps of falling down into the material world. And you mentioned it in the verse, you said that it was usually quoted, that when one contemplates the object of the senses, one develops attachment for them. At what point, if one sees oneself going through that, you mentioned one thing was to make a plan. Sometimes when we're involved in this fall down process, it's so intense trying to get out. And is there anything else that you may suggest in terms of, it's almost like one is bound. And to get out, it seems very difficult, even when one is engaging in devotional services. But if you could say anything else, I would appreciate it.
Well, just like we were saying, if we remain in the association of devotees and we take a lot of responsibility within this mission of Lord Chaitanya, then on that side there's that much less opportunity to become weak or to become distracted. There just isn't time. And on the other side, we see what happens when one does fall down to the material platform. One's life becomes hellish. That's why we become devotees in the first place. Sometimes we forget. And then crawling back up is not an easy thing. Just like it's very easy to go into a room and just mess it up. You can mess up a room in 5 minutes. You can just make it look like you just throw ink all over the place and break things. But how long does it take to make it nice again? It takes a long time. So just one little slip can cause so much havoc. A little slip of the razor, you cut your face. On one little bit of inattention, you can stub your toe and break it, which is what I did. So now for months I have to wear this thing. So that's what it's like when we are inattentive in spiritual life. So is it worth it? It's worth it to give up all the nectar of devotional service. We have to think like that. So what happens if we don't, and what happens if we do? Good association is the main thing. From that everything comes. And from bad association, then we lose it. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Śrīla Bhakti Tirtha Swami ki jai. Śrī Śrī Rādhā Dāmodara ki jai. Go Premanandi.
Yeah.